Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mehler here. Happy to have you along today as we begin by talking about a new book that's out about Erin Hills. You know where Erin Hills is? Well, it's in Erin, Wisconsin. It's the host of the 2017 U.S. Open Championship. Paul Hundley, my guest, he's a freelance sports photographer. He specializes in golf course photography. His work has been featured in many golf magazines and books, including the recently released coffee table book, Erin Hills Golf Course in Erin, Wisconsin, home of this year's USGA Open. Gary D'Amato wrote the scripts for it, but he took the photos. And so we'll talk with him about the course itself, but we'll talk about photography, too, and outdoor photography. Obviously, that's what he specializes in. And hopefully hear about your experiences. Maybe you've played Erin Hills Golf Course. Maybe you have questions about photography and shooting. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mehler Show Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Paul Hundley, welcome.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. How's your golf game?
There is no golf game this year.
Why is there no golf game this year?
With the lead up to the Open, there just hasn't been time.
You know, it's one of the problems. You do golf.
I do play golf.
But you have to take photos as part of your work. And when you're taking photos, you can't be playing golf.
No, it's actually two completely different ways to look at a golf course. And I've heard photographers say that the best way that they learn a golf course, the best way to study it is by playing it. If they tell you that, they're just trying to get a free round of golf out of you, because it is absolutely the worst way to study a golf course for photography. To the point where if I am going to play a course, if I know I have time, I never play it until I'm done with the photography.
Oh. So how's it different?
Well, as a player, if you're a good player, you're looking at each individual shot and trying to size up what is your
next shot. Yeah.
Or where should I hit this ball to leave myself a nice next shot. Where photography, there's none of that. You're simply looking for... Well, in my case, I don't go for quantity. I go for quality. So if I can produce, I want to say, 3 to 5 really spectacular photos in a session, that's all I care about.
Yeah. Well, there's lighting and shadows. I mean, as I look through your book, which is fantastic.
Thank you.
You do such a marvelous job of... For example, the shot that you have in your book of Holy Hill, it's Holy Hill. Maybe tell people what Holy Hill is. If they some people will know, but some won't.
Holy Hill is a basilica, I believe a Carmelite basilica, that is about 3 miles east of Erin Hills, clearly visible from most of Erin Hills golf course. So it's become a landmark. And in fact, the tee shot on the 18th hole, you pick one of the spires of Holy Hill, and that's your aiming point.
Yeah, and the shot that you have, well, you have more than one of it, but the shot with the lighting on the hill taken from the 18th fairway, I think.
The one taken during the intercollegiate tournament.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is phenomenal and gives us a sense for the grandeur of the place.
There's a story behind that too, in that when I found that shot the night before that tournament and knew I was going to do my last couple shots from there, but the plan was to have a group of players on the tee with the green, the lodge, and Holy Hill in the background. But as you can see looking at the pictures, it was very overcast that day. Clouds are moving very fast, so I'd have sun for 5 seconds, shadow for 20, sun for 10, shadow for 15. And I have probably 30 or 40 shots of that, but in none of them was there a player on the tee box in sun with Holy Hill in sun. And so I had to make the decision, do I follow this last group up and get a shot of them putting out and finishing the round, or do I stay here and hope for something better in terms of lighting? And I made the decision to stay where I was. And the second last photo I took had the players in sun in the foreground, the green in sun, the lodge in shadow, the hill behind the lodge in shadow, and Holy Hill in bright sunlight.
Bright sunlight. You know, I wondered if you'd had to doctor that a little bit.
Interesting story there, too. When Erin Hills posted that image on their Facebook page, the day they posted it, they sent me a link. Somebody had commented on the photo and said, Photoshop is a great thing, isn't it? And Erin Hills had forwarded it to me and said, do you want to answer this? And I ended up not answering it because I couldn't think of a way to word the answer that didn't sound like I was demeaning the writer. But my answer would have been something along the lines of, yes, Photoshop is a great thing, but proper planning and execution is far better than Photoshop.
How the heck did you get involved in golf course photography?
When I was growing up, I thought what I wanted to do for a living, and actually would still like to do this, I thought I was going to design golf courses.
Aha.
So I studied design all through high school, all through college, and was traveling around the country. When I'd get near a course that people would tell me was worth studying, I would go and knock on the door and introduce myself and ask them if I could go out and wander around their golf course. And over time, what happened is, and I've been a photographer since fifth grade. I actually set up a darkroom in fifth grade. Mm. So I'd take my camera with me on these trips, but I'd take pictures just for my records, what I liked about design, what I didn't like about design. But over the years, courses started to call me and say, hey, we remember you were here a couple years ago and you took some photos. Can we see them? And they started to offer to buy them. And I went, you know, either I can continue to pay my own money to go study these courses, or I can charge them to have me go study them. And I decided to go with plan B.
Oh, man. So tell us, do you have some favorite courses? Erin Hills has got to be up there.
Erin Hills is very high on my list. Locally, I am in love with Milwaukee Country Club, have been ever since I was a caddy there, honor caddy for 3 years back in the 60s and 70s. Love the golf course, both as a player and to photograph it. Sand Hills in Nebraska is spectacular. Prairie Dunes. There's a lot that come to mind.
It all sounds wonderful to me. And do you shoot those and then take pictures? Is that what you do? Or do you shoot the photos and then play golf afterwards on those courses or not?
When there's time, I do play golf. But as I said earlier, the priority for me is to get the work done. I can tell you, for example, one trip I took about 9 years ago, I was shooting for a company that has built a lot of Pete Dye's golf courses.
Mm-hmm.
And so the trip included the Ocean Course at Kiawah Island, the Dye Course at Carlton Bluffs, Carlton River Plantation, a couple others in Florida, the Dye Preserve in Florida, Old Marsh in Florida. And I didn't play a single round of golf on that trip because the client was in a hurry to get these photos and get a brochure printed.
Oh, boy. You must go away from sometimes thinking, oh, man, I wish I'd had time to play that track.
I do. And in cases like that, I try and get invited back to play sometime, and normally it works.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Erin Hills itself, and just to give people a little background, because there are probably a lot of people who don't play golf, but it's got an interesting little history.
It has a fascinating history, and Gary D'Amato, for anybody who wants to read the history, Gary D'Amato, the author of the book, who did just a spectacular job on the book, and also is a recent inductee into the Wisconsin State Golf Hall of Fame, so kudos to Gary for that.
Yeah.
But he's done a terrific seven-article history in the journal. And it's available online. You can go look it up and read it there. But the history of Erin Hills started for me back in the late 90s when a pair of golf course designers from the Grafton area where I live called me up one day and said, we found this gorgeous piece of land. we want you to see it because maybe with your contacts in the industry, you can find somebody who can get a course built there for us. And they made me sign a non-compete before they went out and showed me the land.
Yeah.
I got on it, instantly fell in love with it, instantly knew the potential because I had studied golf courses for 20 years leading up to that. But at the time, I was just getting started. I had quit my job with Minolta in 93 to go out full-time doing golf course photographer. And this photography, this was 94. So I really didn't have many contacts other than the people at Kohler, which was my first big client. And so once I got word from Mr. Kohler he wasn't interested in the project, I sort of put it on a back burner. But a year later, when the non-compete had expired, at a golf lesson once, I had mentioned to my golf instructor, David Rasmussen, that there's this piece of property out near Holy Hill that was just spectacular, could easily be a top 50 in the world golf course. And he said, well, let me talk to some of my students because I have some people who could build that if they wanted. So David and I spent 2 years holding open houses, getting people out there, contacting everybody who was anybody in real estate development, but we just couldn't get anybody interested. Everybody said, yeah, it's a great piece of land, but it's too remote. You'll never make a golf course work here. And I think they've been proven wrong.
Oh, my goodness me. They certainly have. And there's a... So describe, for those who don't know, what is the land like?
The land is pretty much untouched glacial topography, so very much like the north and south units of the Kettle Moraine. There are eskers, there are kames, kettles, all the main features that you would find on any well-glaciated piece of land. But as one of the designers, Mike Herdson, has said, it's not just that it has those features, but that the features are in perfect rhythm for a golf course. Because if they're spread out a little bit more, you can't route the holes through the valleys. If they're too condensed, it's just too hilly to build a golf course. But it just so happens that it's natural topography and the rhythm of it, the rhythm of the rolls, is perfect for golf.
Yeah, it really is. And the thing is, let's compare Whistling Straits to Erin Hills for just a second. Whistling Straits, there was a lot of land moved around in Whistling Straits. I mean, you wouldn't recognize the original from what is there now, which is spectacular, but there wasn't a whole lot moved around in Erin Hills.
No, there wasn't. In fact, I was involved on Whistling Straits from the beginning, too. They had me up there when it was still, for those who don't know this, Whistling Straits was an Air National Guard landing strip.
Yeah.
So it was that flat. And so everything you see there, everything, was created. I think they moved, my number might be wrong, but 2 or 2.5 million cubic yards of dirt to build Whistling Straits. I was just talking to the designers a week or so ago, and they never really calculated, but they think at Erin Hills they moved 35 to 50,000 yards of dirt.
That's almost nothing.
Which is almost nothing.
Almost nothing compared. And having played Whistling Straits, it's plenty hilly enough now, and you wouldn't really even know that all that earth had been moved.
No.
But it is a fantastic strait. Having some fun today talking with Paul Hundley. Paul's a freelance sports photographer, specializes in golf course photography, and he's taken, I don't know, we'll ask him how many photos he's taken of Erin Hills. The title of the book is Host of the Erin Hills, host of the 2017 U.S. Open Championship. You may have some questions about golf courses or about photography and shooting, maybe not a golf course, but maybe just shooting outside. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mehler Show Facebook page. I'm Larry Mehler. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network, taking a look at landscape photography and also about this new book on Erin Hills, the great golf course that's going to be hosting the 2017 U.S. Open Championship, actually next week. And I tell you what, the book, Erin Hills, was photographed by Paul Hundley. Gary D'Amato wrote the script for it. Paul's a freelance sports photographer, specializes in golf course photography. So certainly happy to talk about the courses that he shot, about Erin Hills, and also just about shooting photos outdoors, landscape-type photos. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. One other little point I wanted to mention. I will be at Lambeau Field on June 22nd at 5:30. We're going to do a great Packers history sort of a mock program with a Packers president and CEO Mark Murphy, with the Green Bay Packers official historian Cliff Kristol. And it is going to be a lot of fun. There will be a tailgate involved and a whole lot of fun. And if you want to join us, and I hope you do, you can go to WPR.org/100. That's WPR.org/100, or call 800-747-7444. 800-747-7444. Love to have you there. I think Joy Cardine's coming. A lot of people are going to be there, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm having fun talking with our guest, Paul Hundley, today. And again, join in with your own questions or comments or maybe experiences at 1-800-642-1234. So Erin Hills is hosting the event, the Open Championship, next week. It's going to be pretty exciting. Are you going to be there to record those events?
I will be there every day. And in a perfect world, I'd be there sun up to sundown, but that probably won't work. So I have to learn to modulate a little bit, but I will be there.
What's it like to attend an event like this?
I have no idea. Ah. I've never been to a U.S. Open before or any major golf tournament. The one thing I will say, that my job being there, because I will be actually shooting for Erin Hills.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not shooting for Sports Illustrated or Golf Digest, Golf Magazine. So of the, I'm going to guess, roughly 100 photographers that have media credentials, I will be doing something that none of the other 100 will be trying to do. And that is, my job is to capture an action shot, which is compelling enough to just get somebody to look at the photo in the first place, but I still have to make the golf course the star of the photo through composition, through framing. I'm there to make the golf course look good and to tell the story of a U.S. Open from the standpoint of Erin Hills. I'm not there to really capture the players.
What goes into your thinking with something like that then?
Well, I've got a number of different shots I'm thinking of doing now. And actually, I'll be out there tomorrow at Erin Hills all day. And the plan is to pick about 25 or 30 vantage points that I know I'm going to shoot from, where I think I can get a great portrait of the course using the players as design elements, but important design elements.
So, and you've been there. Obviously, you've shot on. See, you know pretty much right where you're going.
I do. Well, but I won't know because I haven't seen the final setup yet with all the grandstands and all the television towers. So I'm going out tomorrow to find out where I can and can't shoot from, because obviously if there's a TV stand or camera stand in the way, that shot's not available to me.
What is it? Let's say I want to take some landscape photos of myself. I've got a favorite lake, or I've got a favorite. I've taken a lot of photos on golf courses myself just for fun, you know, with a moose or a deer or a bear or even turkeys. I run into all of those on golf courses in Canada or here in Wisconsin. I'm taking a quick snap. But what goes into composition for a great landscape shot?
Well, the biggest thing to me with composition, that when I look at other people's photos, what strikes me is that people don't do a good enough job of framing their shot. And by framing, I'm talking more about what you exclude than what you include. That's the first thing I would say, is be ruthless about what's inside the frame. And if a design element or a visual element doesn't add to the story you're trying to tell, get it out of the frame.
So move your camera angle, move yourself,
do something so that everything that's left in that frame when you're done composing it is an integral part of the design and needs to be there.
And other mistakes that people make, let's say when people are involved, what would you tell somebody, okay, if you want a shot of this group and we're outside somewhere, what do we want to do?
To be honest, I'm really not a people photographer, and it's one of the reasons I really enjoy golf courses is the little bit of people photography I have done hasn't been particularly pleasant, and I love golf courses because, for example, no golf course has ever come back to me after a shoot and said, you know, in this shot, my butt looks a little bit large.
Oh, man.
They don't blink. They don't have goofy expressions. So I can't really talk too much about people. What I'll say in general about photography is timing. It's timing, timing, timing. And look at it this way. If you were to take a camera and set it up anywhere, whether it's a golf course, a lakeshore shot, wherever you are, and you set that camera up on a tripod, hooked it up to an intervalometer, and set it to take one picture every minute from, let's say, 30 minutes before sunrise to 30 minutes after sunset, which this time of year would be about 900 photos, you would find when you go to edit them that one of those 900 will be better than the other 899. So the biggest job for a photographer is to look at a scene and determine what is the best minute, not half hour, not 45 minutes, what is the best minute to shoot this shot. And that's the hardest challenge for me in a golf course, is I've got to find 3 to 5 to 6 of those a day, and I have to decide at when I'm studying at 2 or 3 or 4 in the afternoon when each shot is going to have its 1 minute peak.
And, you know, you think about it, you know, photography classes that I took and so forth, I would guess that more of your photos are taken either earlier in the day or later in the day than they are in the middle of the day.
Yes. Any photographer that goes into a golf course and says, I can make you look good between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., unless it's a heavily treed golf course, just doesn't know what they're talking about. There's a lot of different things involved. One is obviously you get shadows early and late, which you don't have middle of the day. And shadows are critically important design elements in any composition. The other thing is somewhat just physics. Without going into too much detail, when the sun angle is low, what you're seeing is just the tips of each blade of grass. Most of each blade is in shadow. The greenest part of a blade of grass is this tip. That's why grass looks the greenest early and late, because you're seeing just the very greenest tip of the grass. You're not seeing the sort of bluish green grass that the rest of the stem has.
I never have thought about that, or I'd never been told that before. That is really cool. So that's something any photographer should, you know, regardless if it's a golf course or wherever you're shooting, to take into account.
Right.
Absolutely. Jeff on email says the scene you describe at the Holy Hill course sounds like an extreme brightness range problem, pretty tough to do with most digital cameras. How do you manage to capture that kind of dynamic range?
Well, actually, the beauty of digital, and I fought a long time before I switched from film to digital. Now I don't look back. One of the beauties of digital is you have a much broader dynamic range in digital than you do in film. But the key to that is...
And dynamic range, you mean?
The difference that a digital sensor can capture from the brightest scene to the darkest
okay.
and still have detail in the brightest scene and detail rather than the complete black in the shadow. But you need to shoot in raw format. That's number one. Absolutely, don't shoot JPEG. Shoot in raw format. Because what the raw format file does is it captures every bit of information that sensor is capable of capturing. Then when you take it into Lightroom or Photoshop, you get to decide, do I want to emphasize the blues, the reds, the greens, the highlights, the shadows? And you pull into the visual part of the image the elements you want to be visible.
Really cool. Connor on Facebook would like to know if you have experience or have recommendations on camera settings for film. He uses a Canon T5i, I believe, and has tried CineStyle, but can't quite get the quality to look as good as it can.
Yeah, I probably can't help him much with that because I really don't pay attention to equipment other than the specific equipment that I've amassed, which is at this point specifically geared to golf course photography. What I will say is I do not use any of the styles. Like he's talking about CineStyle. My camera has landscape. It has portrait. What I've done is I've created a custom profile that works for me, and that's the profile I use in my camera. And I would recommend just practice. Try different things.
What about lenses? You probably have a pretty expensive camera, I would guess. Is that the most important part, or are the lenses the more?
No, by far, the lens is the important part. If you're just starting out in photography, spend every penny you can possibly spend on a lens, even if that means having to settle for something less than a top-of-the-line camera, because the camera is just a box to hold the sensor. The photographs are made in the lens. And the other advantage to spending more on a lens is then you're ready to upgrade when you can afford a better body. You will actually see an improvement in the image at that point, where if you start with an inexpensive lens and upgrade to a better body, you won't see any difference because you're still shooting through an inexpensive lens.
So spend the money, and what kind of a range in turn, you know, what's...
I, over the years, have had lenses that cost anywhere from $2,000 or $3,000 up to $8,000 or $9,000 per lens.
Wow!
Now, you don't have to do that. I happen to be a Canon user, and I shoot with nothing but Canon L-series lenses, and I think the range is probably 800 to 2,000 or 3,000 for the lenses I own.
Talking today with Paul Hundley. Give a call with your own questions or comments. We've got a couple of nice questions on email at ideas@wpr.org or on our Facebook page, The Larry Mealer Show. But if you have an experience to share or a question about photography, I hope you'll join us. 1-800-642-1234. Again, email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mealer Show Facebook page. Looking at your book, the Aaron Hills book, I would say the majority of the photos in there don't have people in them. Do people in a landscape, do they detract?
No, I don't think so. In fact, there's one, and I don't remember the page it's on, that shot of the group walking up a hillside where they're two-thirds buried in grass. It's right about the middle of the book. The people made that shot. They were the focal point of the shot. One of the reasons I generally counsel clients away from including people is because fashions are dated. And so unless they want to have me back every couple years when a new color or a new style is in vogue, it can really date the photo.
Haven't thought about that either, but that's do you get asked back to many courses, or how does that work?
I do. I'm lucky enough that my clientele is pretty loyal, so whenever they feel they need to update their look, they generally call me back.
Oh, so that gives you kind of steady work then.
It does.
Oh, well, favorite courses that you've shot?
Well, like I say, Sand Hills in Nebraska, certainly one. Aaron Hills is near the top of the list. Milwaukee Country Club, the Dye Preserve, where actually the designer of the Aaron Hills book and I, 10 years ago, did a limited edition book for Dye Preserve, which turned out great. Old Marsh in Florida is just a magnificent place to photograph. Kiawah Island, of course, was was wonderful.
What makes them good for photographic purposes?
I think they have to have enough movement to the terrain, whether it's bunkering or natural hills. That's what I need to work with, because my interest is in capturing shadows, shapes, and patterns.
And you certainly have done that in this book. And we should talk about how your book is organized here, too. I mean, it's kind of hole by hole, but tell us about the book itself.
I wasn't really particularly involved in the organization. That's another shout out to the designer. Larry Hasek did a wonderful job. Discussion started in 2014, and it's been on again, off again, on again, off again since then. But in January, I got a call from Larry that said, I'm the new designer on the book. And as I said, I had worked with him on that book for the Dye Preserve, so I was thrilled. Larry's a great designer, very professional. And he said, let's get going. We want this book on the press in 6 weeks.
No!
So I started by sending him 2,400 JPEGs and thought that he would just have a fit, but he loved it, and he spent about 2 weeks, then came back to us at Erin Hills with a proposed layout and a proposed chapter order. So he did all the organizing. He picked the first 150 or so photos, and then it evolved from there to the final product.
And you start with, there's a little kind of the story of Erin Hills,
right.
and then how does the rest of it goes?
I haven't really memorized the order, but it starts with a little bit of the background. It goes on to the terrain, just showing the terrain early on. So there are photos. I actually started to photograph the land back in the 90s. Construction didn't actually begin on the course till 2004. There was an interesting thing done in 2003 where the owner at that point took one of the early routing plans from the designers and simply mowed that routing plan into the vegetation. So it looked like a golf course. And he had me out to photograph that. So there's that early in the book, some of that. And then from there, it just goes on to the evolution. The course has changed tremendously since it opened in 2006. At least three greens I can think of offhand have been just changed completely. Another green has been changed quite a bit. So that comes next. And then they talk about Erin Hills' history with amateur golf, and they're very proud. That's a focus of Erin Hills. They hosted the U.S. Amateur in 2011, and they've been hosting many amateur events, and that's going to continue to be a prominent part of what they do.
And the U.S. Amateur, some of the guys that played in that U.S. Amateur, I think Jordan Spieth was one.
Jordan Spieth was one. In fact, funny story about that. When I got the first proof of the book, there was a photo of Jordan Spieth, and I called the designer and said, hey, why are you using other people's stuff? And he said, no, that's one of yours.
You didn't know. Oh, you didn't realize it at the time.
I had no idea. Didn't know who he was.
Well, I guess he
was 2011.
That was, yeah, now pretty much if you're a golfer, you know Jordan
right.
Spieth. You know who Jordan Spieth is. Well, oh my gosh, this is a lot of fun. Are you going to be around? I mean, you're going to be taking photos. Are you going to also be there to sell the book or be around for that?
Actually, I'm glad you asked that. There will be 5 different signings of the book in the U.S. Open merchandise tent. And of them, 3 of them are Gary D'Amato, the author, and I. And we're going to be there, let's see, I've got it here, this coming Sunday from 1 to 3, we'll be signing the book in the merchandise mm-hmm. tent. Then next Thursday and next Saturday, during the tournament itself, 9 to 11, both of those days. And then the architects, Hersden, Fry, and Witten, will be there signing books next Wednesday and next Friday from 3 to 5 p.m.
So lots of opportunities that way. Now, go ahead.
And I'd like to add, too, you can also buy the book from Erin Hills Online Golf Shop. And I believe Jill is going to put that link up on the site.
We
but it's
got
just
it.
ErinHills.com.
So we've got that up on the... We've got that up, and you just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. Okay, here I sit about a 20 handicap. You and I go out to play golf there, and we go to play the tips. For those who don't know what a tip is, it's the far as back as you can get. What are we going to shoot?
Oh, I'm not
now,
sure.
Now, par is 70. What's par? 72, isn't it? Is it there or is it 70? I forgot.
It's 72. In fact, interesting side note, it'll be the first U.S. Open played to par 72 since, I think, 91 or 92. They've all played to 70 or 71. There might even have been a 69 in there. But let me ask you this. Do you take mulligans or do you count every stroke?
Well, I try to count every stroke. I have pals who say, well, you get one mulligan a round, and some people say, well, you get one mulligan a nine, and I go along with whatever anybody else wants to.
Because I do play with people who will shoot a seven or eight and say, oh, put me down for a five. But if,
well, I keep a handicap, so I really can't do that with any conscience.
If we were to play a USGA rules round of golf from the tips, I think 150 would maybe be a good score.
Yeah. I was talking to Jill, my producer, beforehand, and I said, you know, if I shot that from, if I played that from the tips, I'd probably shoot 140, 150 and feel just fine about it. Oh, my gosh. This has been so much fun. Paul, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Hey, you've got a beautiful book here with some great stories by Gary D'Amato, and looking forward to visiting Erin Hills next week, the U.S. Open. It's a great time to be there, but I think any time, even if you're not a golfer, right? Just visit that place?
I think so. But if you are a golfer, I want to say this, and there are still tickets available for the Open.
Yeah.
So go to usopen.com. You still can get tickets. It's a chance to see the first ever U.S. Open in Wisconsin state history. I think if you love golf at all, it shouldn't be missed.
Yeah. And in a sort of a final, that if you think about the state of Wisconsin, where we've got about 150 days of golf, the quality of the golf courses that we have in this state is remarkable.
And it's only getting better. The new Sand Valley up near Wisconsin Rapids is spectacular.
And are you going to shoot that one too?
I will at some point this year before the Open. Nothing else got done, but I will be up there this summer to do that.
I'm looking forward to that. And when we add in all of the other great courses, it's You got a lot of work ahead of you.
I hope so.
Paul, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Paul Hundley was the photographer for the book Erin Hills, host of the 2017 U.S. Open Championship. A lot of fun talking with him about photography and about Erin Hills. Of course, I'm a golfer, and so I like talking about golf anyway. But tell you what, you don't have to be a golfer to appreciate the beauty of that particular place. Well, we're going to switch gears entirely and talk with you a little bit about marriage. You know, it isn't easy, and sometimes it's best to end it. But how do you know if you should end it or not? There's a new book out by Vivian Probst. It's called I Was a Yo-Yo Wife Until I Learned This. We'll visit with her next on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.